right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, December 4th, 2017. All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Psych Tuesday, I think. Yeah, Tuesday, December 5th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a rainy and dark 46 degrees here in upstate New York. Soon to have lake effect snow. So where do we leave off yesterday? You just heard us starting that show. We called the show Robo Bug, Optogenetics, Elect RX, Ultrasonic Hacks, RC Brains, as in remote control, and EMF. And we are going to continue along the lines of manipulating biology by flipping electrical, optical, and audible switches in our brains. Our brains are made up of all kinds of physics utilizing frequencies with pulses, pulses of light, pulses of electricity, pulses of sound. And we have found that they have been able to change behavior and make creatures turn right or left and do other things like turn into killing machines like those little mousies. Just by manipulating our neurons. So we're going to take a look at a few other things today that I still have lined up from the end of that show. There was a story that came out about a year ago, and I thought we covered this at one point, but I thought it was kind of important now. This is titled, New Device, Let Scientists Play the Brain Like a Piano. Well, just like different scales or wavelengths that go up a scale, you know, if you look at light, let's say, these sine waves go up and down, we have a scale of different processes, different frequencies that our brain operates on, the theta, beta, alpha, I don't know, whatever they are. There's a whole bunch of them, but they're different consciousness states. We've talked about this before. Depending on your consciousness state, that gives you the wavelength that your brain is working on. With some of the latest developments, there is a new 3D chip that may soon allow neurologists to switch specific areas of the brain on and off. Examining how different thought patterns, say memory of a loved one versus a looming dentist appointment, function in the brain. The practice of optogenetics already pairs light-sensitive genes with light sources that turn brain cells on or off. But to date, the light source can only affect one isolated spot in the brain, while activity usually involves a complex sequence of activations in different locations. So by implanting prongs that can emit light at different depths within the brain tissue, a new device is taking optogenetics into three dimensions that should enable much more flexible research, oh goody, of the Nanophotonics and Neuroengineering Laboratory at Brown University. Another long-term goal is to understand the specific sequences of brain activity that underlie disease processes. Remember, they want to be able to diagnose us with mental disease on a spectrum, or the brain's response to therapies. These patterns could then be used as a way to test efficiency of a drug or to develop better interventions for the disease. So they want to be able to push your buttons and play it like a piano. So we looked yesterday at not only optogenetics, but also sound. Ultrasound can be used to flip switches in the brain as well. And the story that we didn't get to yesterday at the end of the show was about this new chip that converts data that is stored as light, like pulses of light or flashes of light, whatever commands they want to put in there, whatever calcium ion channels they want to flip open. And they've been able to turn light waves into sound waves. Researchers at the University of Sydney, now think about this one for a minute, have designed a microchip capable of converting light waves into sound waves. This enables information stored as light to be slowed down and processed more efficiently. For the very first time, digital information in the form of light waves has been converted into sound waves and placed into a microchip. The conversion process allows the stored information to be slowed down, making it easier to manipulate with photonic circuits which are being developed for use in the microchips, which control data using light instead of electrons. This world's first was accomplished by a team of researchers at the University of Sydney, led by a doctoral candidate, Moritz Merglin, and Dr. Bridget Stiller, with the research published in the Journal of Nature Communications. Merkel and Stiller are from the ARC Center of Excellence for Ultra-High Bandwidth Devices for Optical Systems, and the team used the Australian National University's Laser Physics Center to design the microchip. These sound like two pretty smart cookies. Light is extremely useful when it comes to moving information across great distances. Fiber optics has always been the carte blanche of speed. But it is unbeatable speed is also its detriment, as it makes it difficult for computers and telecommunication systems to process that stored information. Speed isn't useful if the information cannot be processed. So that is why sound waves, rather than the conversion of light to sound waves, work so well here. This process shows that the slows the information down long enough for it to be processed before it is converted again back into light waves and sent on its way. The information in our chip in acoustical form travels at a velocity 5 orders of magnitude slower than the optical domain. That is like the difference between thunder and lightning. Traditional electronic devices used in telecommunication networks and optical fiber networks, which is the stuff I used to work on, are vulnerable to interference, and yes, they are very vulnerable, and to length of cable, and are capable of producing excessive heat using too much energy. Implementing light and sound waves on a photonic microchip eliminates these problems. Photons are immune to electromagnetic interference, and there is no electronic resistance to produce heat. Additionally, with this process, overall bandwidth is increased, and data can always travel at light speed. So what do you think of them apples? Well, then I came across this, which was even more interesting. This was from a little bit earlier. That story was actually just very recent. Let me scroll up. September 18th, 2017, out of futurism.com. Now, this one is May 19th, 2014, out of the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. New T-ray technology converts light to sound for weapons detection and medical imaging. Now, we've talked about T-rays before. They have one of those T-ray machines in New York City being utilized by the NYPD, and that would be the terahertz scanners that can detect whether or not you have any type of explosive material on you, or chemical or biological, because it does some sort of high-level spectroscopy. But it also can see deep into the skin, which is why they want to use it for medical imaging as well. This is the next spectrum in the radio spectrum above what is going to be coming with 5G, and that would be millimeter wave, and then you have terahertz wave. All right, so Ann Arbor, Michigan, a device that essentially listens for light waves could help open up the last frontier of the electromagnetic spectrum, and that would be the terahertz range. The so-called T-rays, which are light waves too long for the human eye to see, could help airport security guards find chemical and other weapons, and they might let doctors image body tissues with less damage to healthy areas, like the CAT scans. And they could give astronomers new tools. Yes, they use this in space as well, to study planets and other solar systems. These are just a few of the new possible applications. But because terahertz frequencies, oh, I don't know, can rip apart DNA. And maybe we'll get to that. I think I still have that queued up here somewhere. Falls between the capabilities of the specialized tools presently used to detect light. Engineers have yet to efficiently harness them. The University of Michigan researchers demonstrated a unique terahertz detector and imaging system that could bridge this terahertz gap. They say they convert the T-ray light into sound, says Jay Gu, U of M professor of electrical engineering and computer science, as well as mechanical engineering and macromolecular science and engineering. Our detector is sensitive, compact, and it works at room temperature, and we have made using it as an unconventional approach. The sound the detector makes is too high for the human ears to hear. This terahertz gap is a sliver between the microwave and the infrared bands of the electromagnetic spectrum, and that is the range of the light's wavelengths and the frequencies. The spectrum spans from the longest low-energy radio waves that can carry songs to our receivers to the shortest high-energy gamma rays that are released when nuclear bombs explode and radioactive atoms decay. And I want to point something out. Those low-energy radio waves at the far left end of the electromagnetic spectrum is where our brain works, and we found that out a long time ago. We were looking at the different brain frequencies in these states of consciousness. And what's scary about this is as they're cracking all of these keys to physics in the physical world, don't think that this isn't going to be able to affect us in some way, shape, or form. We looked at them studying electromagnetic frequencies and whether or not our actual cells communicate with EMF. So if they learn to tap into these different energies, just think of all the horrifying things that they could use it to do. So in between are the microwave frequencies that can cook food or transport your cell phone signals or do your Wi-Fi in your house. And the infrared enables us to have heat vision technologies. The visible wavelengths are light and color in our world, and the X-rays give doctors a view under our skin. The terahertz band is scientifically rich, according to Wu and colleagues, but today's detectors are either bulky, need to be kept really cold to work, and they can't operate in real time. That limits their usefulness for applications like weapons, of course, and chemical detection, as well as medical imaging and diagnosis. Gu and colleagues have invented a special transducer that makes the light-to-sound conversion possible. And this is something that I want someone to build me. It appears that they have done it since 2014. A transducer turns one form of energy into another, and in this case, it turns terahertz light into ultrasound waves, and then it transmits them. The transducer is made up of a mixture of a spongy plastic called, oh, I don't know if I could say this, polydimethylxylone, or simply PDMS, in carbon nanotubules. Here's how it works. When the terahertz light hits the transducer, the nanotubes absorb it, and they turn it into heat. They then pass that heat onto the PDMS, and the PDMS expands, creating an outgoing pressure wave, and that's the ultrasound wave. It is more than 1,000 times too high for human ears to pick up. There are many ways to detect ultrasound. We transformed a difficult problem into a problem that has already been solved. Though ultrasound detectors exist, including those used in medical imaging and some of your mobile devices and your devices that have voice activation, the researchers made their own sensitive one in the form of a microscopic plastic ring known as a micro ring resonator. The structure measures only a few millimeters in size, and they connected their system to a computer to demonstrate that they could use it to scan and produce an image of an aluminum cross. The response speed of the new detector is a fraction of a millionth of a second. Wow! Which Wu says can enable real-time terahertz imaging in many areas. Let's hope they don't put these suckers on satellites. And I think at one point I did see that there was something with Northrop Grumman that they were working on with DARPA to put some of these things into the sky. This system is different from other heat-based terahertz detection systems because it responds to the energy of individual terahertz light pulses rather than a continuous stream of T-rays. And because of this, it is insensitive to variations outside temperature. The study is efficient real-time detection of terahertz pulse radiation based on photoacoustic conversion by carbon nanotube nanocomposites is published in the online feature of Nature Photonics. The research is funded by the National Science Foundation and the Air Force Office of Scientific Research, who also maintains Space Command. So I don't know what to think of that. It's pretty interesting. They can turn terahertz waves into ultrasounds and then pump light as sounds. ultrasound they have used to flip brain switches, just like they have with optogenetics. Well, now, here we go. The image of the brain the radiologists and researchers have been waiting for, and this is out of the newsroom of GE Healthcare. The researchers in the radiology department at the University of Wisconsin are some of the first to use a new MRI that images the brain's tiny cross fibers and white matter like never before. Dr. Alan McMillan and Dr. Samuel Hurley, researchers in the Department of Radiology at the University of Wisconsin Madison, spent much of their brain power studying other people's brains. And they are two of many across the globe rapidly conducting neurological research similar to the Human Connectome Project, which was a project to construct a map of the complete structural and functional neuronal connections in the brain. Kind of like Paul Allen's Brain Atlas. These researchers have made tremendous progress despite the challenges. The human brain is made up of 100 billion neurons, and its wiring is filled with crossing pathways and white matter. Well, that wiring is not neat and organized. It is very complex and has a lot of crossing pathways, and they are really trying to get a good connectome, which is what it's called. We've looked at the Connectome Project a couple different times, to be able to reproduce brains to use to create artificial intelligence, but of course, to cure your neurological disorders that you don't quite know that you have yet. So you get on your EEG to do things such as wireless thought typing. So anyway, to be able to get an accurate picture of how the brain regions talk to each other and how they are wired together, we need to be able to see those crossing fibers and where these connections are going. That is why researchers and radiologists have been eagerly waiting for the ability to capture an accurate picture of the brain that visualizes the tiniest details of these crossing fibers and all the white matter so they can better understand and help treat disease and injury. To date, for example, there is no conclusive test to diagnose traumatic brain injury. As part of their efforts, researchers in the radiology department of the University of Wisconsin are now some of the first to use an MRI scanner that images the brain like never before, including the tiny crossing fibers and the white matter. And like researchers of the Connectome Project, the Cigna Premier and Ultra Premium 3.OT MR system is the result of a collaboration between GE Healthcare and research institutions around the world. And I just seen recently GE Healthcare teamed up with NVIDIA, who is the leader right now in making AI chips for systems using optical GPUs. So that is going to give them even better artificial intelligence behind some of this stuff. Using the new technology, Dr. Hurley's research has been able to measure the physical connections between the brain regions where all the white matter acts like wiring that connects the different regions of the brain together and then connect the brain to the body through the spinal cord and the vagus nerve, we found out. We are getting much more realistic views of how the brain connections are wired together, and it is enabling us to non-invasively measure the brain. Non-invasively is the key term. People, they discovered, are not going to go for a brain implant, I don't think. Not willingly, at least. We are pushing the imaging technology to where we can get a map of the brain's connection and a map of the brain wiring that appears to be the most accurate of what we have seen to date. Their goal is to develop quantitative MRI methods to measure white matter in the brain throughout the disease progression so they can diagnose you and quantify your mental illness once they have diagnosed you remotely with some of these new tools. So far, not the MRI, but some of these new consumer tools that are coming. Remember, don't put anything in your eye or anything on your head. So far, we have been really pleased, Dr. Hurley said. We can set up the MRI protocols we need and then run them through the existing Human Connectome Project image analysis pipelines. We are getting results that look as good or as better than images that we have seen previously. And the technology is said to be so powerful that it can also make an impact in scanning the body. Another member of the team. And one of the problems with MRIs before, even though they do potentially less damage, they say, than a CAT scan, because you're not getting the radiation, you're just getting electromagnetism, they aren't high resolution up until recently. And then they got to give you that dye, too, that screws up your kidneys. So another member of the team, Dr. Scott Reeder, professor, vice chair of research, and chief of the MRI at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, has been using Cigna Premier, which must be GE's product, in his research on oncology and liver disease. This is because it also features an industry-first lightweight coil that lays like a blanket on the patient, an innovative take on the traditional bulky, heavy, rigid coil laid used in the MRI scanner. Air technology, a new suite of RF coils, enables total freedom in the coil positioning and the handling of an MRI scan, and is 60% lighter, benefiting both the patient and the technologist compared to traditional coils. Remember, this is like an advertising piece that GE put out for themselves. The first images of a new MRI that images the brain and the body like never before, tiny crossing pathways, white matter and all, were shown for the very first time on Lab Invaders Episode 3, which is a series live on Facebook when the engineers took a camera inside of the lab at GE Healthcare to show a behind-the-scenes look at how they made this invention a reality. They even scanned one of their own brains. Actually, there's a video here. So as they're getting higher and higher resolution images of our brain, and they are finding ways to use sound and light and electricity with transcranial stimulation to be able to alter chemical and electrical pathways in our brains, the U.S. military is now testing mood-altering AI-controlled brain implants in humans. Yes, I said it. This is like a whole bunch of our nightmares all put into one title. This story was from last week, November 28th, 2017. Brain implants can be used to deliver stimulation to specific parts of the brain as needed, and this technology could have profound effects for all those poor people who suffer from conditions like post-traumatic stress disorder and depression. Currently, our favorite love-to-hate DARPA is funding two teams which are running preliminary trials of brain implants. They use specialized algorithms to detect patterns linked to mood disorders. Okay, Johnny, hear a little bit of oppositional defiant disorder. We'll just take care of that. These devices are able to deliver electrical pulses that can supposedly shock the brain into a healthier state. Remember, DARPA spent a lot of time working on that ElectRx program, trying to find all kinds of different ways to physically manipulate brain circuits. Research about these closed-loop brain implants, and that's exactly what they're using in that RX program, was presented at the Society for Neuroscience meeting held in Washington, D.C., and it seemed like every neuroscience crazy was at that meeting, and all these new technologies were presented there. I want to see a video. Somebody see if they can find me that, of that meeting. There are hopes that technology could provide new ways to treat mental illness that go far beyond the capabilities of current available therapies. With the use of brain implants to deliver electrical pulses, it is referred to as deep brain stimulation and is already used to treat ailments like Parkinson's disease. However, while there has been some evidence to suggest that constant stimulation of particular brain regions could help with chronic depression, one major study saw no improvement after 90 subjects were shocked for a whole year. These new projects differ from previous attempts in that the implants are specially designed to tackle mental illness, and they activate only when they are needed. The idea was then to only stimulate the brain intermittently rather than constantly. So while the end goal for this research is to develop new treatments for conditions like depression and post-traumatic stress disorder, the research group based at the University of Southern California is currently working with people who suffer from epilepsy. The implanted electrodes are being used to track brain activity related to mood in order to develop algorithms that can observe patterns. So they're going to have the AI software watching your brain implant to see whether or not your chemical or electrical signaling in your brain is starting to go off the rails, and then bring you back within parameters. Meanwhile, a research group at Massachusetts General Hospital, remember they are connected with Harvard and MIT and all those other institutions that are working on this stuff with Georgie Porgy Church, is mapping brain activity associated with behaviors linked to multiple different disorders, like issues pertaining to concentration. or empathy, and that would include psychopathy, I would imagine. These researchers are working on a set of algorithms that can apply a pulse to the brain when it is distracted from a particular task. Oh, no, I'm not going to be zapping all the time. So, look, there's a chicken. And they like identifying the emotion presented on a face. This study has already established that electrical pulses can be helpful in performance tasks when applied to areas of the brain responsible for decision-making and emotions. The team was also able to map the brain activity associated with failing or slowing down in a task when distracted, finding that stimulation could reverse that process. So anybody who's got ADD, anyone who's been affected by the dopamine button of their addictive devices, yes, it's something that they are spending a lot of time looking at now because it is a real syndrome. But look, we have all these research subjects now that we can fix with deep brain stimulation and artificial intelligence. So the next step in this research is to test algorithms that can detect certain patterns that trigger the need for stimulation. Closed-loop stimulation, just like that implant the two cardiologists wanted me to get put in my chest, has a lot of potential when it comes to applying long-term treatment, but it will require plenty of fine-tuning in order to get the best results. For example, stimulating parts of the brain associated with mood can have the unintended effect of producing exaggerated happiness. Yeah, those really types of annoying people that drowns out all other feelings. This research is part of a set of ethical concerns that you think that'll shape the continued development of this technology. And implants like these could offer real-time insight into someone's emotions and their moods. And being able to manipulate, that's a key phrase right there, manipulate those feelings carries moral obligations. They want to be able to manipulate our brains like remote control, maybe even by thought control, like we saw them do in an experiment that they were doing with mousies. This research has the capacity to do some real good or some real bad, and it is important that it is developed ethically with these issues and these deep, dark things that could happen in mind. So I came across a few interesting stories this morning in one of my email feeds from Google Alerts on neurons. These are things that I did not know about, so I thought I would share them with you. ScienceDaily.com says neurons have the right shape for deep learning. Deep learning is in AI. December 4th, 2017, out of the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research, researchers unveiled an algorithm, ding, ding, that simulates how deep learning could work in our brains. The network shows that certain mammalian neurons have the shape and the electrical properties that are very well suited for learning. Deep learning has brought about machines that can, quote-unquote, see the world much more like a human can and recognize language as well. And while deep learning was inspired by the human brain, the question remains, does the brain actually learn this way? Well, that's a very good question. That answer has the potential to create more powerful artificial intelligence, just what we need, and unlock the mysteries of human intelligence. In a study published December 5th, which is today, in eLife, CIFAR fellow Blake Richards and his colleagues unveiled an algorithm that simulates how deep learning could work in our brains. The network shows that certain mammalian neurons have a shape and electrical property that's well suited for deep learning. Furthermore, it represents a more biologically realistic way of how real brains could do deep learning. Research was conducted by Richards and his graduate students, and I'm not going to read all their names. Their algorithm was based on neurons in the neocortex, which is responsible for the higher order of thought. Most of these neurons are shaped like trees. I thought this was pretty cool. With roots deep inside the brain and branches close to the surface, says Richards. What is interesting is that these roots have different sets of inputs than the branches that are way up at the top of the tree. So you have branches way up at the top for the basic stimulation that then go way deep down to a granular level and spread out all over the place. Using this knowledge of neuron structure, Richards and Gudurdev, one of his students, built a model that similarly receives signals in segregated compartments. These sections allowed simulated neurons in different layers to collaborate, achieving deep learning. This is just a set of simulations, so it can't tell us exactly what our brains are doing, but it does suggest enough to warrant further experimentation, examination of our own brains, and if we use the same sort of algorithms that they use in AI. This research idea goes back to AI pioneers Jeffrey Hinton, and a CIFAR distinguished fellow and founder of the Learning in Machines and Brains program, as well as co-program co-director Yosha Bengo, who was one of the main motivations for founding the program in the first place. These researchers sought not only to develop artificial intelligence, but also understand how the human brain learns. And that's what you guys need to understand. I think that people finally are starting to get the big picture that learning all about our brains isn't to really cure what ails our brains. It is to utilize our brains as a mirror image to create an artificial life form. An artificial life form that'll someday be our overlords, that'll be more intelligent than us, and potentially want to squash us like ants. Now here's another story that I came across this morning in that same feed, and this really caught me by surprise, but I thought it was pretty neat. Neuroscientists discover networks of neurons that stretch or compress their activity to control timing. This would almost be like a little heartbeat of the brain. Timing is critical for playing a musical instrument, and after especially we just looked at playing the brain like a piano, swinging a baseball bat, or many other activities, neuroscientists have come up with several models of how the brain achieves its exquisite control over timing, which is the most prominent being that there is a centralized clock or pacemaker somewhere in the brain that keeps time for the entire brain. However, a new study from MIT provides evidence for an alternative timekeeping system that relies on how the neurons responsible are for producing the specific action. Depending on the time interval required, these neurons compress or stretch out the steps they take to generate the behavior at a specific time. What we found is that it is a very active process, and the brain is not just passively waiting for a clock to reach a time at a particular point. MIT postdoc Jing Wang and former postdoc Navika Naren are the lead authors of the paper, which appears in the December 4th issue of Nature Neuroscience. Graduate student Ingabal Hosseini is also an author on the paper. One of the earliest models of timing control, known as the clock accumulator model, suggests that the brain has an internal clock or pacemaker that keeps time for the rest of the brain. A later variation of this model suggested that instead of using a central pacemaker, the brain measures time by tracking the synchronization between different brain wave frequencies. Now, I thought that was kind of cool. So it's playing your brain like an orchestra. So it really is like notes on a piano. And although this clock model is intuitively appealing, they don't match well with what the brain does. No one has found evidence for a centralized clock, and Jaziri and others wondered if parts of the brain that control behavior that require precise timing might be performing the functions themselves. People now question why would the brain want to spend time and energy to generate a clock when it is not always needed. And for certain behaviors, you need to do timing. So perhaps the parts of the brain that subserve these functions can also do the timing themselves. To explore this possibility, the researchers recorded neuronal activity from three brain regions in animals as they performed a task at two different time intervals, one at 850 milliseconds and one at 1500 milliseconds. The researchers found a complicated pattern of neural activity during these intervals, and some neurons fired faster, some fired slower, and some that had been oscillating began to oscillate faster or slower. And however, the researcher's key discovery was that no matter the neuron's response, the rate at which they adjusted their activity depended on the time interval required. At any point in time, a collection of neurons is in a particular neural state, which changes over time as each individual neuron alters its activity in a different way. To execute a particular behavior, the entire system must reach a defined end state, and the researchers found that the neurons always traveled the same trajectory from their initial state to their end state, no matter the interval. The only thing that changed was the rate at which the neurons traveled this trajectory. That's pretty damn cool. So when the interval was required, was longer, the trajectory was stretched, meaning that the neurons took more time to evolve to this final state. And when the interval was shorter, the trajectory was compressed and it actually happened faster. Now, speaking about things happening faster, if I can get this page to load. Hello. I'm afraid to hit enter because sometimes that'll put me into lockup, but let's see what happens. All right, this is out of International. We're gonna sing. Da, 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 da. I gotta remember my favorite song. Uh-oh. Alright, this is out of the International Defense, Security, and Technology publication, abbreviated IDSTCH.com. Quantum machine learning promises exponential speed up of internet searches, fraud detection, face detection, and brain mapping. Well, thank goodness. Quantum computing and quantum information processing is expected to have an immense impact on performing tasks too hard for even the most powerful conventional supercomputer, and has a host of specific applications from code breaking and cybersecurity to medical diagnostics, big data analysis, and logistics. Machine learning is a subfield of artificial intelligence which attempts to endow computers with the capability of learning from data so that explicit programming is not necessary to perform this task. Machine learning algorithms allow computers to extract information and infer patterns from recorded data so computers can learn from previous examples to make good predictions about new ones. Machine learning has now become a pervasive technology underlying many modern applications, including internet search, fraud detection, gaming, face detection, image tagging, brain mapping, check processing, and computer server health monitoring. However, both training and execution of large-scale DNNs, I'm not sure what that is, dynamic neural networks, requires a vast amount of computing resources, leading to higher power requirements and communications overhead. Quantum computers running on a subatomic level using quantum bits or qubits can represent a zero and a one at the very same time, so making it much faster. Processor using qubits and using physics as well. A processor using qubits could theoretically solve problems exponentially more quickly than traditional computers for a small set of specialized problems. Quantum machine learning algorithms can use the advantages of quantum computation in order to improve classical methods of machine learning. I just read IBM had some new quantum computer they were working on with one of the military divisions. I don't remember which one. And it was fastest quantum computer that they had ever seen. So put on a seatbelt. China's been working on this as well. Quantum machine learning algorithms can use the advantages of quantum computation in order to improve classical methods of machine learning, for example, by developing efficient implementations of expensive classical algorithms on a quantum computer. Scientists have trained a quantum computer to recognize trees, a step towards using such computers for complicated machine learning problems like pattern recognition or computer vision. And for example, a team member... Oh, I'm not even going to try this. Rakamisha Nira Nimina, an earth scientist at NASA's Advanced Supercomputing Division in Mountain View, California, says that the study lays the groundwork for better climate forecasting. Of course, it's all about climate forecasting because of climate change. By poring over NASA's data satellite imagery, quantum processors could take machine learning approaches to uncover new patterns in how weather moves across the world over a course of weeks, months, or even years, he says. Say you're living in India, you might get an advance notice of a cyclone 6 months ahead of time because we see a pattern of weather in northern Canada. Researchers from Caltech and the University of Southern California report the first application of quantum computing to a physics problem. By employing quantum-compatible machine learning techniques, they developed a method of extracting a rare Higgs boson signal from copious noise data. Higgs is the particle that was predicted to imbue elementary particles with mass, and it was discovered at where? Oh, the LHC, Large Hadron Collider, in 2012. The quantum program seeks patterns within a data set to tell meaningful data from junk, and the new quantum machine learning method is found to perform well even with small data sets like the standard counterparts. Quantum computer learns to quote-unquote see trees. Well, in the new study, physicist Edward Bodna of the St. Mary's College of California in Morgana and colleagues fed hundreds of NASA satellite images of California into the D-Wave 2X processor, which contains 1,152 qubits. The researchers asked the computer to consider dozens of features, hue, saturation, even light reflectance, to determine whether clumps of pixels were trees as opposed to roads or buildings or rivers. Oh, yeah, wouldn't that work out well for surveillance? They told the computer whether its classifications were right or wrong so the computer can learn from its mistakes, tweaking the formula it uses to determine whether something is a tree. And after it was trained, the D-Wave was 90% accurate in recognizing trees in aerial photography of Mill Valley, California. Classification is a tricky problem. There are all sorts of trees, tall trees, trees next to each other, next to buildings, all sorts of combinations. Guys, this is going to be crazy. If they apply this to, like, the Argus drone with a super HD camera that can scan a fly on your bumper from the nether regions of lower space. Imagine what this is going to do once they put things such as terahertz lasers on these things. So here we go. Quantum computing, just like a lot of these other disruptive technologies, has now become an arms race, and it is taking shape between China, the U.S., and Russia as they all vie for supremacy. Chinese computer scientists have developed a prototype of a groundbreaking new quantum computer and promises to create a version as powerful as the world's most powerful supercomputer by 2020. What is this publication? Sputnik News contributor Ila Prichitov explains how and why the world's leading military powers plan to convert these machines into powerful weapons. Last week, Chinese computer engineers announced that they had successfully created a quantum computer which is faster than the early generation of mid-20th century conventional computing machines. Zhang Hui News explained that unlike conventional silicon-based computer chips, which render data in one of two states, which would be 0 or 1, quantum computers allow data to exist in both states simultaneously, giving quantum computers the idea to hold exponentially more information. Quantum computers operate on quantum bits or qubits, the unit of a quantum information analogous to a classical bit, but the computing power of a quantum computer grows exponentially as the number of quantum bits or qubits can be manipulated is increased. According to the quantum computer with 50 manipulatable qubits, it would be more powerful than the Sunway Tahoe Light, which was the fastest supercomputer in existence today, also operating in China. Yeah, we read about the Tahoe. Chinese scientists say that they are making rapid progress and they expect to build a quantum computer as powerful as a common laptop by the end of this year and as powerful as the world's most powerful supercomputer by 2020. Those are some pretty lofty goals there. Chinese prototype quantum computing system is already said to be over 24,000 times faster than its foreign counterparts. Plekhanov explains the first and most obvious military application for a modern, fully functional quantum computer is the capability to engage in near instantaneous hacking into encrypted military servers. Remember, nothing is safe. And if it might be quote-unquote wink safe today, it might not be tomorrow. And those controlling the national infrastructure systems of the probable enemy. in case of a military conflict, having this capability would give one side a huge advantage, the expert noted. U.S. cybersecurity analysts have confirmed that other countries are already out there mining U.S. systems, storing the data, and then patiently waiting for the advent of quantum systems that would allow them to gain access to the most heavily encrypted U.S. secrets. The speed of data computation and processing, which quantum systems will allow for, will also, quote, significantly improve the work of unmanned and autonomous military vehicles to which the conduct of military operations will be entrusted in the foreseeable future. Plotkinoff explained that quantum computers will also be used at various stages of the design of new weapons, new materials, and even in the development of new strategies for warfare, including AI. And battlefield projections, naturally, are another area where quantum computers can be applied where they start running war games in virtual reality. Ray Johnson, the former technical director of Lockheed Martin, once said that quantum computers would be able to predict how satellite software behaves following a solar burst in the sun or a pulse from a nuclear explosion, something that is currently either very difficult or almost impossible to do. And with the possible benefits of quantum computing self-evident, Plotkinoff noted that multiple players, including Russia, China, the United States, Canada, Japan, Israel, and Europe, are all striving to get the upper hand, with China and the U.S. battling for the top spot. Vic Stein did not offer any further details, but late last year, two leading Russian quantum computing researchers at the Institute of the Russian Quantum Center and the Mises National University of Science and Technology also announced the creation of a joint project known as Quantum Center, which aims at combining their efforts to create quantum computers. A quantum computer specifically for military applications hasn't gone without notice either, Plotkinoff noted. Last year, the Russian State Atomic Energy Corporation, called Rosatom, founded in the Foundation for the Advanced Study in the Ministry of Education and Science, signed onto a joint three-year project on the development of a quantum computer. Rosatom's Nuclear Weapons Research Institute at the All-Russia Research Institute of Automatics, has been charged with taking the lead in organizing this project. This is just lots of long strings of names and words. U.S. experts have compared victory in the creation of the world's first most powerful quantum computer with the moon landing, so this is another Sputnik moment, and added that the loss in quantum computing race would be much more severe than the consequences of losing the race to the moon. Wink. In a recent interview for National Review, Dr. Chad Rigetti, a former member of IBM's Quantum Computing Research Division and now CEO of his own company, Rigetti Computing, emphasized that, quote, computing superiority is fundamental to long-term economic superiority, safety, and security. So it's all a matter of national security. In the U.S., Rigetti says, must-have strategy that views quantum computing as a way to regain America's superiority in high-performance computing. Last year, for instance, White House officials admitted that Washington's superiority in computing technology was under siege and that more investment was needed specifically in the area of quantum technologies. Science education figures are indicative, Plotkinoff noted, and currently the U.S. educational institutions produce just over 500,000 graduates in science, technology, engineering, and math. In China, that figure is 4.7 million a year and growing. Wow. Europe is focusing on the creation of its own quantum computing over the next 10 years, investing equivalents of $1 billion into its quantum technologies flagship program. And meanwhile, U.S. state-based spending in the field of quantum developments is currently less than $200 million. Remember, they're going to use this for brain imaging and things like that also. Now let's get to one other story. Since we were talking about flashes of light and quantum computers and sounds and physics, this is out of Engadget, November 5th, 2017, so exactly a month ago, corkscrew light beams could lead to practical quantum computers. And there's an image here of a corkscrew light beam. And I thought to myself, well, I have seen that image before. Where have I seen that image? Well, I've seen that image in a few different places. One was with a physicist who was working on trying to create a real time machine. And he found that by using high intensity lasers and mirrors, he could bounce the mirrors around inside of a tube to create a vortex of light. And he thought that might be a secret. But also in this picture, with this vortex of light that is being created, coming down a funnel almost, but like a tube around the edges in a spiral looking very much like DNA, and then opening up on the bottom to a big, this one is a fluorescent green spiral. I thought to myself, oh, the Norway spiral. Yes, it looks a lot like the Norway spiral. And we did actually mention CERN in one of these articles as well. So who said that light only had to travel in boring waves or particles? Well, not Harvard. Its researchers have now found a way to spin light into complex states that promise breakthroughs in multiple fields. They have built metasurfaces whose elaborate optics combine two kinds of light momentum, and that would be orbital angular and spin angular, to send light into corkscrews, spirals, or even fork-like shapes. A lot like lightning. And if you want to change the light state, you just need to change the polarization of that light. And they are not just for show, of course, though they look really cool. The research team envisions these complex light states for being very useful for quantum optics and data, which could also help quantum computers become a practical reality. They could also lead to high-powered imaging, where a hole in the center of the light vortex could be changed to refocus on a subject. Huh. That's pretty interesting as well. And it could also lead, like a big eye in the sky, it could also lead to better free space optical communication that can transmit through turbulent air by making, in essence, a wormhole and other conditions that scatter light. While this is very early days for this exotic light manipulation, it could prove instrumental to computing in the long run. And that's where they leave the story. They didn't even go to some of the scary implications. I mean, literally, if they could manipulate this and make something stable where they could send information down the center, that literally would be like a wormhole. How long would it be take for them to convert matter to light or light to matter? I thought we just read a story where they had actually done that. All right, so here was another one out of DARPA that was kind of scary, I thought. We had talked about, I don't know, I think that might have been maybe a lecture we heard. Maybe it was a story. I don't quite remember. It's been like my brain has been in a blender for the last couple of weeks. But we read a story like maybe it was Ben Goertzel in his discussion. He had mentioned that we hope, though he can't promise us, that someday super intelligent AI or artificial general intelligence wouldn't get bored with us as humans and turn our molecules into a new storage device. Well, check this out, because DARPA's already working on it. DARPA's Molecular Informatics Program to develop molecular devices for military information storage and processing. Molecular electronics, also called molatronics, is a branch of nanotechnology where the molecular building blocks are used for fabrication of electronic components. Now let that put a little chill up your spine. It is an interdisciplinary area that spans physics, chemistry, and material science, and the smaller size of the electronic components, they decrease power consumption while increasing the sensitivity and sometimes even increasing the performance of the device. These have a wide range of applications in the areas of chemistry, physics, and electronics, as well as nanoelectronics, technology, artificial intelligence, and medical equipment. As the complexity and volume of global digital data grows, so too does the need for more capable and compact means of processing and storing that data. Data storage and processing is central to the Department of Defense activities. across areas including platform design and optimization, sensing, mission planning, and logistics, as well as healthcare. While our current computational architectures remain essential, new complementary approaches are needed to provide advanced capabilities as the complexity and the volume of the data grows. DARPA has launched the Molecular Informatics Program with the aim to discover and define future opportunities for molecules in information storage and processing. Molecular Informatics Program seeks new paradigms for data storage, retrieval, and processing. And instead of relying on binary digital logic of computers based on the von Neumann architecture, molecular informatics aims to investigate and exploit a wide range of structural characteristics and properties of molecules to encode and manipulate data. Remember a while ago we looked at them utilizing DNA as a storage device, and if they encased it in glass, it could hold data for millions of years. Guys, this is just more warping of the biology that makes up our planet and turning it into a big machine that can be manipulated and used by the powers that be. And you know what? I don't have my bumper on, so we might not have any music coming. But I'll tell you what, I got about 10 more seconds here.